An equipment box, Glassman pulled out Binox, while Mitchum limped to the forward bow. Illuminated by the silvery moonlight streaming through the rumbling clouds, the men watched as the distant air wag abruptly rose high into the sky, then dropped toward the ground, narrowly rushing over a stone bridge. Cannons roared at their passing, and the air wag disappeared into the darkness beyond.
Did you see those cannons? This must be the pirate base.
No, it has to be their main base. This is the home of the pirate fleet.
Where are the ships?
Don't be a stoop, Donovan. Think they'd leave the fleet in plain sight? It's probably anchored on a nearby atoll where we can't see them.
Which means that they can't see us either.
For some reason, that seemed important to the Secman. Just then, the island trembled slightly, and seconds later, a wave lifted the ships yards high, then lowered them undamaged. The navvies paid it no attention. Just a quake wave, and they rode them out all the time. Nothing to be concerned about.
Skipper, the Outlanders are pirates?
Looks like. Must have been testing out their airwag before starting a war. On the other hand, lads, we just found their home dock. We're rich. Kinnison will make every one of us a baron for finding this.
But Ryan escaped. They're on the island. We have to land immediately and run them down.
Without wags?
Breathing raggedly, Mitchum said nothing. He'd taken a gamble and lost.
Besides, they're dead by now from the rads.
But pirates live here, so the Outlanders will be fine.
Maybe.
There's gotta be some kind of safe passage through the craters. But how the hell can we find it?
First, we lift anchor. Donovan, take us back to Cascade. Best speed.
Aye, aye, sir.
You're leaving? Well, put me on the beach. I'll stay.
Can't. I need you to help oversee the handling of the slaves. You've done it before. My sailors haven't. Wait, Donovan! Send off a messenger falcon to Kinnison. Tell him what we've found, and request the entire fleet. Every ship we've got that can carry cannon or birds.
Aye, aye, sir!
Slaves?
All they have. And if the Ville hasn't got enough, we'll also take every citizen and Secman. I'd say 100 should be enough.
Enough for fucking what?
To use as a key, of course.
Ryan's dreams were wild nightmares of falling, then suffocating, loud noises, pain, laughter, bad smells, and now, endlessly rocking. The Deathlands warrior awoke with bright sunlight shining in his face, and he sat up to see where they were, only to slam his head against something hard. Trying to rub the spot, Ryan found his hands were bound with ropes. He tried to break the strands, then realized it was some of the plastic rope from the Bob Marley.
Ugh. Damn.
So, those dreams had been real. They lived through the crash, only to be taken prisoner. Gathering his wits, the one-eyed man saw he was in an iron cage on the back of a wooden cart, the steady sound of horse hooves on stone coming from the front. As his vision cleared, Ryan saw he was traveling through a ville full of people. Streams of men and women were moving past the cart on both sides. Children were playing in the mud, barking dogs running about, farmers selling produce from wheelbarrows, and in the distance he could hear a muted work song from slaves. Then the cart rolled by the bloated corpse of a woman hanging from a rope. Disobedient, scrawled on a placard, hung around her swollen neck. Ryan checked his clothing, but his blaster and gun belt were missing, along with his backpack, ponga, and everything else. Even his eye patch was on backward, and his clothes in disarray. He'd been searched, and anything that could possibly be a weapon was gone. Surreptitiously, Ryan checked the laces of his combat boots, and was pleased to note the laces were still tied with the double knot he regularly used. Okay, not completely unarmed then, but nothing he could reach fast. The cage's thick bars cast most of the interior into shadows, so Ryan crawled across the cramped quarters to check the other passengers. Rolling over a man, he saw it was JB, with everything gone but his glasses. That was odd. It had to mean something important, but what? Lying nearby were Doc and Dean, in a similar state of disarray. They had each been stripped clean. Even Doc's walking stick was gone. They had to have found the sword inside.
Shit.
But the rest of the companions were missing. Blood pounded in his temples, and Ryan fought to control his terrible temper. Whatever was happening to his other friends, there was nothing he could do about it at the moment. Going over to JB, Ryan placed a hand on the man's mouth and shook him awake. Instantly, JB flicked open his eyes and reached for a blaster, his hands jerking to a stop by the robes binding his wrists to his ankles.
Stay quiet. We've been captured.
JB nodded in understanding as Ryan scooted around for Doc, but the scholar winked at him and slowly sat upright.
I, too, am alive. But only technically, I assure you.
Patting the man on the back, Ryan checked Dean and found his son also awake, only pretending to be unconscious.
How are your boots, Dad? Mine are okay.
The man shot the boy a stern look, and Dean blanched at the stupid mistake he'd just made.
Oh, man, what a feeb.
They were in a cage, and the unseen driver could probably hear everything they said. The boy might have already given away their only chance at escape.
They're both okay.
Ryan pointed overhead, then pressed a finger to his lips. Awkwardly shuffling to the bars, JB studied the lock, then turned away in disgust. There was no lock, just a length of steel chain bolted in place. No way he could open that from the inside, even if he had a wrench big enough to do the job. Looking at the passing Bill outside, he saw the houses were pre-dark, rebuilt into decent condition. The road was paved, broken sections patched with pieces of sidewalk, giving the roadway an odd checkerboard appearance. Chained slaves were everywhere, small children whipping a crippled old man who was trying to sweep a dirty floor with his bare hands. A Sekman squad marched a badly bleeding man toward a hangman's gallows. In a tavern, a young girl stood silently weeping with her serving tray held high as the drunken customers pawed at her budding breasts.
This isn't Cascade.
Indeed not, John Barrymore. And if we had been taken by Mitchum and Glassman, they would surely be standing alongside to gloat. This must be some unknown vill on the island.
A secret vill on Forbidden Island.
Could be throwbacks, or even pirates.
We're pirates, the true rulers of the world. Now shut up.
Going to the front of the cage, Ryan reached through as far as he could with his tied hands and tugged on the dangling coat of the unseen man driving the horse and cart.
Hey! Do that again, and I'll use the whip. The Baron wants you alive, but he never said undamaged, so be still, bitch.
Fuck that crap. Tell me where you're taking us, or I'll rip out your guts with my bare goddamned hands.
Ain't telling you shit.
Ryan yanked his hands away from the bars, just in time to miss losing flesh. The man was fast and serious, a dangerous opponent.
We can pay. I know the formula for...
Nuke shit! You don't know shit, and you ain't got shit, so don't give me no shit. You belong to his nibs, and that means you're dead. What can a dead man give me?
The driver pulled out a 9mm Heckler & Koch blaster.
Besides, I already got your blaster.
Retreating to the center of the cage, the companions rode through the bumps as the cart rolled up a short flight of stone steps and onto an older street made of cobblestones, the granite pegs worn smooth by the passage of the years. Suddenly, a mob of children shrieked in delight at the arrival of the cage and started pelting the prisoners with stones.
Ah, motherfucker!
The men moved quickly into a huddle to protect their faces and grunted with the impact of every hard-thrown rock. The driver allowed it for a while, then whipped the brats away. As the men released one another, they could now observe that this was a much nicer section of the vill. The houses were bigger, and many had glass in their window frames. There were no more farmers selling in the street, and the men and women slowly walking by were dressed in fine clothes with no patches, boots polished, faces well fed. Only the men wore the wide leather belts of a sailor, but both sexes carried blasters on their hips. Often they had liveried servants carrying parcels or holding umbrellas to keep the sun off their fancy masters.
Officers' quarters.
The driver took them up an inclined road to crest onto a higher level. Here the road was made of red brick, and the cart wheeled past a yard-tall stone wall lined with heavy cannons, mounds of cannonballs and bags of powder placed closely nearby. The gunner stared at the passing prisoners and made crude comments. Each man wore a wide leather belt with a short sword thrust through. Many were barefoot with rags tied about their heads to keep the wind from blowing hair into eyes. No lazy dandies here. These were fighting men, the defenders of the Ville. Rubbing a rock bruise on his shoulder, Ryan guessed it was these guards who'd fired cannons at the Bob Marley. He looked them over carefully, but saw no signs of recent